Shri Chaitanya Manupistam Sabhramyana Bhuttale Svayam Upakaramayam Dadati Svabhadantikam Namam Vishnupadaya Krishnapista Bhuttale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sasvari Deve Govani Pachayane Nirvishesha Shunyavari Pashyatara Shatarane Vanchakopa Dribhisha Kripa Sindhivevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pavanityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasadi Go Bhaktamanda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So thank you very much for coming on this pretty rainy day. I didn't even expect so many of you to come. I thought most of you would stay at home and rather watch it all online. So just the fact that you're coming, so it looks like you're very eager and sincere. So thank you. Yes, and it is also a great pleasure for me that I have the opportunity to visit your wonderful community. It's very impressive how beautiful your deities look and so many nice devotees you have here. So actually the Alachua community is famous really all around the world. Yes, everybody in ISKCON has at least heard of the glories of Alachua. It's really like that, yes. A very unique community because there's so many senior devotees, Prabhupada disciples here. There's no other community as far as I know where there's so many Prabhupada disciples. So this is really amazing. Yes, so the topic I chose for today is the power of consciousness. Because after all, we are the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So let us become conscious of what consciousness is, right? Because we often use this term consciousness, but we may not even be fully aware of what consciousness actually is, right? Yes. And how other people's consciousness affect us, how we our consciousness affect other people around us. So yeah, it's all pretty subtle. So actually consciousness is the life force. It's a very powerful energy emanating from the soul. And there we have an verse in the Bhagavad Gita, who is describing this, or which is describing this? There, Krishna is giving us this nice analogy of the sun. Just like the sun illuminates the whole universe. Let me see here. I will just read the translation and the purport. We'll skip the Sanskrit to save a bit of time. So the verse is, O son of Bharata, as the sun alone illuminates all this universe, so does the living entity, one within the body, illuminate the entire body by consciousness. So it's a nice analogy we can easily relate to, right? Like the sun illuminates the whole universe, so consciousness illuminates the body, emanating from the soul. Yes. So and we have a little purport here by Prabhupada. There are various theories regarding consciousness. Here in Bhagavad Gita, the example of the sun and the sunshine is given. As the sun is situated in one place, but is illuminating the whole universe, so a small particle of spirit soul, although situated in the heart of this body, is illuminating the whole body by consciousness. Thus, consciousness is the proof of the presence of the soul. As sunshine or light is the proof of the presence of the sun. When the soul is present in the body, there is consciousness all over the body. And as soon as the soul has passed from the body, there is no more consciousness. This can be easily understood by any intelligent man. So let's try and be intelligent here. Therefore, consciousness is not a product of the combination of matter. It is the symptom of the living entity. The consciousness of the living entity, although qualitatively one with the supreme consciousness, is not supreme, because the consciousness of one particular body does not share that of another body. But the super soul, which is situated in all bodies as the friend of the individual soul, is conscious of all bodies. That is the difference between supreme consciousness and individual consciousness. So, I mean, we can say, thank God, we are not conscious of every body. We have enough to do with one body, being conscious of that one. So yeah, but that is the difference between supreme consciousness and the individual consciousness. Yeah, so basically, as we said, consciousness is the symptom of life. As soon as a soul is present, there is consciousness. And very originally, the consciousness is pure and sublime, as the soul is pure and sublime. But by being in this material world, the consciousness gets influenced by the three modes of nature and thus contaminated, covered like that. And yeah, it's interesting. Consciousness is not only flooding the whole body, but it is also emanating from every pore of the skin, actually. That's what we call the aura, right? Yes. And we can see, well, here we have a painting of Mahaprabhu. Usually in our paintings, our saintly personalities or the Lord himself, they always have this halo around the head, right? Even in Christianity, we also have this, right? So this is not just some artistic tool or something, but no, this is factual, that a person who is in very pure and sublime and godly consciousness is actually effulgent from that godly consciousness emanating, mainly through the head, actually. But not only through the head, through every pore of the skin, like that. And in the same way, a person whose consciousness is not so sublime and pure and godly, but let's say a person who is in consciousness of greed and lust and envy, that kind of consciousness also emanates from a person. Yes. If we are a little perceptive, we can feel this energy. Yes. Yeah. So it's factual. And we have some nice stories in regards to our Srila Prabhupada. I remember hearing this one story where Prabhupada was walking through a city, I believe it was somewhere in America, and he was on the way to a Rath Yatra parade. And some of his disciples were walking with him. And his disciples overheard a conversation between two policemen. And one was saying to the other, look at this man, he is glowing. Yes, even though they had no clue who Srila Prabhupada was, but yet they could perceive that Prabhupada was glowing, that he was shining. Yes, yeah. And I read another nice story, where in which book was that? I think it was in Charmasundra's Chasing the Rhinos. There's this one story in England where one Prabhupada disciple takes pictures of Prabhupada, and he sees through the camera that there is more light somehow. And he's wondering, where is this light coming from? The lights are not on, you know? And then he realized that actually this light came from Prabhupada himself. Yes, and he was completely struck by this, you know? So this is how factual this energy of consciousness is. It is not just something imagined or something, you know? Yes. Yes. And I mean, this energy, consciousness emanating from a body, we may have that experience when we are in a room with a person where we had some tension, some disagreement, some argument maybe. And even though nobody may say something, but you can feel there is some intense energy there, and you can feel, oh, this person is upset with me, this person doesn't like me here, you know? Yes, so that's the power of consciousness, yeah. And I mean, anybody who knows a little bit about medical science, I'm coming from medical background myself, so we know that, let's say we cut off a little piece of our finger, you only have very little time to stitch this little cut off piece back on, because if that piece is disconnected from the powerhouse of consciousness, then the cells die, right? We know about this, right? Yes. So this shows again how consciousness floods the whole body, keeps every cell alive in the body, and only for a very short time, some 15, 20 minutes or whatever, the cells can survive without being connected with that source of consciousness. Right? There is another nice little story which I would like to share with you. I know one family in Australia, a devotee family, where he had a kidney failure. So his wife donated one of her kidneys to him. And she is the only one in the family who really loves to eat chocolate. Nobody else in the family eats chocolate. She's got three or four boys, husband. Nobody likes chocolate, but she loves chocolate. So when they came back from this kidney transplantation, the wife had this desire to have some chocolate. So she went to her cupboard, but all the chocolate was gone. So she asked her husband, "Have you got a clue where this chocolate went?" And he was a little embarrassed, and he was admitting, "Well, I have to admit, these cravings overcame me. And I wanted to have some chocolate, and I pinched your chocolate and ate it all." So then they thought, well, maybe this is connected with this kidney transplantation. So on the next checkup, and she told me this herself, so it's a true story. I was Brahmacharini together in Australia with her. So then on the next checkup, they asked the doctor, they told the story to the doctor. And the doctor was smiling, saying, "Yes, yes, we know. Every time we transplant an organ, the person receiving that organ for some time has the same cravings and tastes as the person giving it." And then the doctor said, "It seems like organs can remember things," which is, of course, nonsense. You know, organs cannot remember anything. But this doctor did not know about the power of consciousness. So her kidney was flooded with chocolate consciousness. And that chocolate consciousness emanated in her husband's body. And that's why he had this craving to have some chocolate. I mean, that's a medical proof how consciousness actually works, right? And it didn't last for very long. It was just a week or something, you know. And then his new kidney was flooded with his consciousness, which was free of chocolate consciousness. Yes. So, and I mean, I have told, of course, these stories in other parts of the world. And once one devotee told me that his son had some bone marrow transplantation. And he said it took him a whole year to get over the effect. Yeah, because we don't know from whom that bone marrow came. You know, this kidney we were talking about is only flooded with chocolate consciousness. Well, maybe the donor was taking drugs or drinking, smoking, doing so many things. You know, and a child's consciousness is also more vulnerable and more, you know, perceptible to influences from outside. So yeah, he shared that with me, that it took him, this son, a whole year to get over this effect of this foreign piece there in his body, which had some not such good consciousness emanating. You know. Yeah, so these things make it very clear that, yes, consciousness is a fact, and it is in every cell of the body, and yeah, like that. So also, of course, not only human beings have consciousness. As soon as a soul is present, as soon as there is some growth, that means there is life, that means there is a soul. That means there is consciousness. So sometimes it is more covered in different animal species, you know. But even trees, plants, flowers, there is consciousness there. Yes. Yeah. And again, quite an amazing story which I heard when I was a teenager, which is quite a while ago, about 50 years or something. But this story impressed me so much that I still remember it after all these years. I heard on the radio there was some report about this topic, consciousness of trees. And they demonstrated how the waves of consciousness can be transferred into sound vibration, and they showed, so this is what a tree sounds like, which is in peace, which is peaceful. And it was just some buzzing noise, like something like that. So, and then they demonstrated what a tree sounds like who is in anxiety. And this sounded very different. I'm not going to try and demonstrate it. But yeah, it was all going up and down and up and down. So, and then these persons were sharing why this tree was in anxiety. Because a man approached this tree who had 3 years earlier cut off some branches. Yes, and that tree recognized that person. Oh no, not this guy is coming again. You know, who knows what he's gonna do now to me? Yes, I mean, this is quite mind-blowing, I think, you know. And of course we can ask, well, how can a tree recognize a person? Tree doesn't have eyes. But no, the tree can also feel the energy, the consciousness, the vibes, as we say, of that person. Yes. So, you know, in these modern days of technology, we are often very, Yeah, almost a little dull and unperceptive. You know, we don't, you know, we are not conscious of these subtleties. Yes, yes. But every tree, there is a personality in that tree's body with consciousness. You know? Yes, yes. And Prabhupada was very, he was very, he disliked when devotees were cutting trees. Yes, yeah. Anybody who's been in Mumbai, in Juhu, outside the temple of Juhu, there is a tree which is almost in the middle of the road, actually. And when you see it, you wonder, what is this tree doing here, you know? And there is a story, can't remember in which book I read that, but where Prabhupada was so concerned when the devotees established Juhu temple, Prabhupada was so concerned that this tree should not be cut. Yeah. And then when he came back later to Mumbai, immediately as soon as the devotees received him at the airport, Prabhupada asked, is this tree still there? Yeah. And it is still there. And when you see it, you remember, oh, that must be that tree. It really looks out of place. You know, but no, the devotees kept it there because Prabhupada was emphasizing it so much that this tree should not be cut down. You know? Yes. Yeah, so all these stories make us more aware, you know, how there is consciousness in every living entity. So now another amazing thing, and we may know this already. Everything we create with our hands, you know, consciousness enters that object. So we know very well how we say the food, you know, the cook's consciousness enters into the food he cooks, right? We've heard this? Yes. Yeah. And it is indeed like that. It is indeed like that. So that's why we usually try and make sure in a temple that the cooks are in good consciousness, that they're practicing Krishna consciousness sincerely, that they're following our principles and chanting the holy name and all these kind of things. Because the consciousness, if food is cooked with love and devotion, that really enters the food and it lingers there. That energy is still there. Yes. I mean, even amongst non-devotees, we know that mother's cooking is considered the best, right? Yes, because the mother puts all her love and devotion into her cooking. Yes, there's nothing, you know, better than mother's cooking, especially if it is offered to the Lord also, you know. Yes, so, and that's why, you know, those of us who practice the process of bhakti more sincerely and strictly, for us it's not enough that it's just vegetarian. But our question is, who cooked it? Yes, who cooked it? So if that's why if we are very serious, we try to avoid cooking things, eating things which is cooked by non-devotees, like in a shop, in a bakery, you know, where maybe the person who is cooking is in some greedy, lusty, angry mood, whatever mood it may be. Well, that consciousness enters whatever the person is baking there. And it will affect us. It will. And it is not only like that in cooking. Anything we may create with our hands, it is executed through consciousness. The consciousness comes out of our fingertips. our fingers only move through consciousness. So, and that enters that object we are creating. That's why handmade things are always very attractive, right? They have a very nice energy. Like when our mother is knitting a scarf for us for the cold season or something. So that scarf has her love and devotion there, and it is lingering in that scarf. And that's what makes it very special, you know? And when we buy a scarf just made in the factory, different energy there, right? Yes, yes. So these things are all factual, you know? I know one devotee in Germany in a rural community. He built his house over several years, more or less with his hands, you know, mainly from wood. And he put so much energy, so much devotion into that house. And when you enter that house, you can feel that. It's a whole different energy than just, you know, walking into some concrete block there or something, you know, whole different energy. You know. Yes. Yeah, so these things are there. And that's, for example, also why, let's say, some clothing which is worn by a saintly person, right? Here we may have Prabhupada disciples who still have something worn or used by Srila Prabhupada, right? So Prabhupada's energy may very well linger still in that item, and that's why it is even worshipable. Yes, yes. So it's not just some, you know, some religious ritual or something that we keep things, you know, as being sacred and so on. But no, it is factual, you know. Yes. The energy is in there, you know. Then another amazing thing, I have to look a little bit at, on the watch here. Another amazing thing is that consciousness travels on sound vibration. Yeah. So whatever sound comes out of our mouth, through singing, through speaking, our consciousness travels on that sound vibration. I dare say, I see this as a special arrangement of the Lord, you know, to make this transcendental sound vibration available to us. So it's a special thing, actually, that the voice is very closely connected to the emotions, right? So if we are angry or upset, you know, very difficult, if not to say impossible, to hide that. It just comes out through our mouth. Doesn't matter how much we try and cover it up, you know. Especially if we know the person a little, we can feel, oh, this person is angry, upset, whatever, you know. Yeah, you can't hide it because it's the consciousness traveling there on the sound vibration, you know. Yeah, so that means, for example, kirtan is a whole transcendental affair. It's not just some jolly, nice music or something, no. It's all transcendental affair because the consciousness of the kirtan leader, if he sings with the love and devotion, calling out to the Lord, you know, then that consciousness travels on the sound vibration and it affects every person's heart who is there in the audience. Yeah. So it is not ordinary music. Yes, it's a whole special thing, kirtan, you know? And in the same way, you know, depending on the consciousness of the person leading kirtan, if we are in a false ego consciousness, if I may call it like that, and a consciousness where we want to bring attention to ourselves and show off how beautiful my voice is. So if we sing in that mood, then that consciousness travels on the sound coming out of our mouth. And that may not be so uplifting then to our consciousness who we hear it, you know? Yes. So that's why it's a very important thing when we join kirtan that we try to really not show off, not to try and, you know, bring attention to ourselves, but that we really glorify the Lord, we call out to him, you know, and we connect with him. That's what kirtan is all about. I know you had a kirtan event yesterday, so it fits nicely to the topic. Yes, so kirtan is a whole, it's actually the perfect and sublime love song, right? There's so many mundane love songs. I love you, you love me, I cannot live without you, and all these kind of things. So, you know, but these are the perverted reflections of the most perfect and sublime love song for Krishna, which is kirtan. So yes, there we also express, my dear Lord, I love you, you love me, I cannot live without you. Please accept me. Please let me serve you. That's how we are meant to enter kirtan. And not only the kirtan leader, but even the instrument players. I do conduct holy name retreats, so I'm taking a little bit here of holy name retreat topic. So even the instrument players, because again, let's say we play madanga, so our fingers move through our consciousness. So if the madanga player wants to be heard and noticed for his expertise on playing the madanga, if you're a little perceptive, you can feel this. Too loud. He wants to bring attention to himself. And it actually disturbs the kirtan experience, you know, yes, because it puts a layer of contamination onto the whole kirtan experience, you know, yes. Or even dancing, you know, if we dance in kirtan, and we should be dancing in kirtan, but not showing off. The showing off poisons the whole kirtan experience. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Actually, I'm sure you are familiar with His Holiness Satchinandan Swami, right? Yes. He conducts holy name retreats in New Vrindavan, right? Yes. I attended retreats with him in Europe in Radhadesh many years ago. And he is also from Germany, so we know each other pretty well. And yeah, and he gives this nice analogy. He says, when we enter kirtan, using the holy name to show off, then this is like taking or giving out a poisonous medicine capsule. Yeah, you heard that analogy of Satchinandan Swami? Maybe not. Yes, he calls it poisonous capsule because it actually has a poisonous effect on the kirtan, the showing off mentality. You know? Yes. Yeah, so we have to be very careful, you know, when we enter a kirtan arena type thing, you know. Yes. Yes. So what else can we talk about? Well, maybe one thing, I'm not even sure whether I should mention this, it may be a little challenging for some of us. But, well, let me say it anyway. let's say we associate with a saintly personality, you know, with one of our, you know, sannyasis, gurus, whoever. So when there is a difference, whether we hear from the person's mouth in his presence or whether we hear over the internet. Yes. Maybe a bit of a touchy topic because we are attached to taking the comfortable way out and hearing over the internet. But yeah, it's good to know that the subtle energy of divine consciousness, the camera lens cannot capture that. Cannot. Yeah. And it's not only me saying that, but there's other personalities. Gaur Govindamaj, whoever has heard of him, he talks about this too, you know. And I once had a very clear experience of this. I was in Bangladesh, I'm preaching also in Bangladesh, and we had an amazing holy name retreat. And there was one kirtan which was really amazing. Every Maha Mantra was like a wave of bliss and joy flooding everybody's heart. And it was not only my experience, I could see people had that experience also. And I almost felt maybe some special personality was present there. It was in a holy place, Rupa and Sanatana Goswami's appearance place. So, and then somebody filmed this and they gave me the CD. And I thought, oh wow, let me watch this amazing kirtan. And I was watching and watching and waiting. So where is it? Where is the bliss? Where are the waves of bliss? And there was no waves of bliss, you know? And then I thought, oh, stupid me, of course not, you know, because the camera cannot capture that subtle transcendental energy, you know? So that's why we should give preference to actually hearing and associating personally, joining the kirtan's life and not through internet. Yes, because internet gives something, but that subtle, powerful energy of consciousness, we are missing out. Yes, yeah. But let me balance it. Gaur Govindamaj says there is two benefits from hearing over the internet. Yes, first of all, we remember that feeling we had when we were sitting in front of that person. Yes, we remember that warm, wonderful feeling in the heart. And second one, we are longing to once again sit in front of this person, if that person is still in this world. You know, so these two are the benefits from hearing through internet. You know, so it keeps alive what we have experienced once in personal presence, you know? So that's why we say, sadhu sangha, sarva shastra koi, lava matra, sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi koi. So lava matra, one moment is enough, but that one moment has to be there to actually capture something transcendental from that personality. And we should take every opportunity to recharge, you know, capture again something and further nourish what we have captured before, you know. So that's why the personal presence is important, you know, just to recharge, you know. Yeah. Okay, well, let me give a few minutes for questions. Since it is a practical topic, most of my topics are always practical application. We'll start with you. Okay. We have the mic.
Hi, Krishna. Thank you for the nice class. I'd like to make a comment on You said about trees, because in the story of the Pachetas, Prabhupada, in one of his purports, he says that in that particular episode that the trees were overgrowing the whole earth, and it was sinful, actually, because the trees needed to be removed so that foodstuffs could be created or grown for the people.
Mm.
So what I got from that is, of course, trees, you know, have consciousness, but there is a time and place that it's allowed.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, we also do, you know, kill carrots, even though they also have consciousness, you know. But we offer them and so on, you know. Yes. Yeah, thank you for sharing. Thank you.
Thank you for a wonderful class. I was just reflecting, though, that we don't want to minimize the power of the holy name, because many of us came and chanted, and who knows how many different kinds of mentalities, et cetera, that holy name is so powerful that it can overcome the lust, the greed, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I think that is, has to be prominent. The purifying power of the holy name. Even there's a story of someone, I forget exactly how it goes, they're chanting something else, and it comes to Rama, Rama, Rama.
Yes.
But
it
purified them.
Yes.
It purified them. So.
And even more so when we join kirtans chanted by pure devotees.
Of course.
You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends that strongly.
Sure. That's there. Yes. But still, the holy name by itself is completely perfect.
Yeah.
Even if it's chanted by someone who isn't necessarily perfect.
Mm.
Right?
Yes. Hare Krishna. What else? We have a question here.
Thank you, Mataji. And consciousness is one of the favorite topics, so thanks. I really enjoyed the class.
Okay.
My question is, so body is made of trillions of cells, and each cell is a living entity. And each cell, but we have one soul in our body. So how does it relate with each cell and one soul?
Because the cell is working by itself in the body. It's jivatma in the cell itself. Like the living body is made up of trillions and billions of souls and living entities.
Well, I mean, if every cell was a separate living entity, then the cell would not have to be connected to the powerhouse of consciousness, right? Of the person's heart. Then the finger could just exist separately from the body. That's my logic here. Yeah, there are some living beings, some bacteria and all kinds of creatures
if you
there.
Cut them off, they can be separate out. So how that then one soul can be divided into two or three? So my question is, as Mataji understood, there are some living beings which you've cut off in two separate parts, then these two separate parts will become each entity. So how come in then?
My limited understanding is that the cells of the body and the skin and so on, they are not in that sense a separate living entity with a separate soul in the cell. Otherwise, they could just exist separately, even disconnected from the body. The finger can just stay alive.
Yeah.
So it must be a little different there somehow.
But
but
we know, science, they cannot create life, but, we know by cloning process, they take one cell and they can grow into each individual in a body. So we know that it's already there. It's just due to certain restriction they are not doing it, but certain part of the world it has been done. So.
But isn't it that the cloning, you simply connect some cells with a powerhouse, you know, like transplanting an organ. You're not putting some new soul there, but you're simply connecting those cells with a powerhouse of consciousness which sits in the living entity's heart.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I meant the cloning is they take certain part of the body, cells, and then they grow in the lab into totally separate entity. Like a sheep cloning, and they have done that, like Dolly, you might have heard, and there are certain other cloning they have done, other parts of the world. Yeah.
But from somewhere, there must be some spirit soul entering there. I mean, see, I'm not an expert in these scientific questions, I have to admit, you know. It's kind of a little,
Another also, so apart from this one, another comment that you made that camera cannot capture the consciousness sometimes.
Yeah.
But there are certain, in the quantum physics, there are certain experiment has been done. I don't know if you heard about this double slit experiment, where they put the conscious being through the camera and they put the objects where they are experimenting totally different part of the world through the camera. They see that consciousness is still impacting through the camera the matter. So there's an effect of consciousness on the matter, direct perception, and through camera or through wire or anything. So it can travel through camera also.
So to some extent it may be, but Shabda Brahma, transcendental sound, that has to be received from a person's mouth. That is described in the Shastra, you know?
Only by looking also. Even just by watching it, that consciousness travels. Even you don't even have to speak up. We see that.
I don't want to get into some whole, scientific debating. And also, it's only a couple minutes to six. Do we have?
Sorry, I was not here for the entire lecture, but the few moments that I heard were quite pure. What I wanted to ask was, I am most fortunate and also unfortunate to come in a time where I am close but also far away from Srila Prabhupada being on this planet. And I have a strong desire to listen to his teachings, his words, and his wisdom.
Yeah.
So when I listen to lectures or watch his videos, they feel so raw and impactful.
Yeah.
And the love and, I would say, pure devotion really shines through.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask, is that hindered by the camera lens as well? Because we also know in the negative sense, if you watch things that are made in very low and ignorant consciousness, like to be vague, or not be vague, to be very precise, like we know that in the promiscuous scene, they film all kinds of garbage and release it into the world and propagate it and make it casual. And we know that that brings down the consciousness.
So yeah, that's the sound, the sound vibration. I actually didn't mention that's why we if we want to seriously practice, we also should be very choosy what kind of sound vibration we expose ourselves to.
Yes.
You know? That's why we don't listen so much to mundane music or something, or we hear mundane movies and all these things, because the sound captures that,
Right.
But very true, when we watch videos about Prabhupada and so on, definitely we capture so much. And yet, we have to really get the deeper attachment to Prabhupada. We have to capture that from a person who carries it in his heart. So that's why we still need guru who can connect us with Prabhupada, who carries that attachment to Prabhupada in his heart, and he can give us that attachment. So just, you know, reading books and watching videos, we definitely get so much, but nevertheless, we still need that connection to a live person who has captured that attachment to Prabhupada from his guru or maybe from Prabhupada himself, and he passes it on to us. And then when we have nourished that attachment and connection to Prabhupada, then we can be such a touchstone to others and we can transfer that to them. You know, that's what the whole parampara is basically all about.
Thank you,
about.
Thank you.
Okay, good.
I wanted to ask one more. How can we identify someone who is as pure as Prabhupada? How can we identify someone who is continuing the parampara properly? Because as we don't want to admit, we know that there are a lot of cheaters.
Okay. Well, as pure as Prabhupada is not existing. There is only one Prabhupada, and nobody in this world can ever reach that level which Prabhupada has. So that's why he is our founder acharya. But we don't have to be as, you know, elevated as Prabhupada is to be connected to him. You know? Mm. So, and there is different signs how we recognize guru. This is quite an involved discussion at 6
topic.
O'clock.
I'm sorry.
Yes. No, but it is a very good topic. And as was mentioned initially, I do have a few books I wrote, and I will be there on the book table where this Prashadam market is. And if anybody would like to connect with me and talk more and have more question answer or have a look at the books. Actually, this topic of consciousness is the first chapter in one book called The False Ego, Our Constant Companion and Troublemaker. There's a lot of interesting things in there, and this chapter of consciousness is the first chapter. And there's so many other interesting books, all practical application of how to actually live what Prabhupada has given us. So please come and visit me there, and we'll continue there. Okay? Thank you so much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktanda ki, Gaura Premanandi, Hare Krishna.